This is After the Gridiron, a podcast featuring interviews with retired football players. If you're a fan of After the Gridiron, make sure you subscribe to the show to ensure that you won't miss an episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Symphonies. Symphonies is an online store that provides custom clothing and accessories. They have a number of quality products available at affordable prices. They offer custom, unique, funny, and inspirational products that you won't find anywhere else. So go to www.symphonies.ca to shop for your next purchase. And as a special offer for our listeners, enter promo code GRIDIRON to get 15% off your purchase. So there's no excuse not to check it out. Again, that's www.symphonies.ca. Symphonies. Great products, great prices. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of After the Gridiron. I'm your host, Lyle Green, and we have a great guest lineup for you today, former teammate of mine. It's Robert Drummond. So Robert played 12 years of professional football. He played in NFL and CFL. He was with the Eagles in the NFL, and for the CFL, he played with Baltimore Stallions, Argos, and BC Lions. He's a third-round pick in the 89 draft, that deep draft in 89, which produced many great players, and Robert was one of them. And he came out of Syracuse University, so the Orange, and had a great career there. And professionally, he had four Grey Cups, so almost a handful of Grey Cup rings from 95, 96, 97, and 2000. He was a two-time All-Star, CFL All-Star in 96 and 97. So an outstanding career in the CFL. And now he's working as a personal trainer. And the name of his company is The Face of Fitness. So Robert, just wanted to thank you for coming on and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. The way you sit there and say so many long things about me makes me realize how old I am.
Exactly. Wow. I know. We're all getting up there. I shouldn't have mentioned the years.
Oh, wait a minute. That's me.
I shouldn't have mentioned the years. Yeah. Makes us all feel old. I know. All right. So I usually start off by asking the guests to say something about themselves that most people wouldn't know. So what would that be for you? What's something about you that most people don't know about you?
I'm pretty much an open book. I don't try and hide who I am. You know, I'm brutally honest. You know, I always try and keep things, you know, as they say, you know, 100, you know, because I have children. Yeah. And I always want to try and lead by example, you know, so, you know, they'll follow and mimic the things that I do. So I have to be honest and real with myself first, you know, so they can honestly be honest and real with not just me, but with others around them. So
yeah.
I just try to be as honest as I can. If you have a problem with someone and something's bothering anything, I'll let them know, you know, just so we can either hash it out or I can even go my way and they can go their way, you know?
Yeah. Makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. All right, maybe later on we'll discover something that we can put for that. All right. So let's go back to the beginning and talk about when you started playing football. When did you start playing?
Oh man, I mean, I think I was a five-year-old kid, and you know, living here in the city of Syracuse, that whose mother really just didn't want him just sitting around the house, you know, come fall. So
yeah.
Her and my dad really devised this plan, you know, that to have me play the game of football, which I had no idea about. And I vaguely remember, but I remember slightly them taking me to my first, you know, tryouts really, or I don't even know if it was tryouts, you know, everyone really automatically made the team, but
yeah,
you know, it was flag football. And I remember her just leaving and me just running and just latching onto her leg because I was like, no, I do not want any part of it. I mean, it's a syndrome any parent around here, you know, when they take their child to, you know, preschool for the first time, or
exactly,
anywhere
yeah.
they have to take a child and have to drop them off for the first time. It's like, it's usually drama, but yeah. It was the same way with me in football. I wanted no parts of that, you know, but she stayed there. I ended up practicing with the West Tennessee Wildcats, believe it or not, you know, that's the first team I ever played for.
Yeah.
And I ended up having fun and wanting to come back the next day, and you know, and the rest is folklore.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Usually, as you said, yeah, with kids, the first day of doing something where you're away from your parents, a lot of drama involved for sure.
What? If it wasn't my kids, I saw other parents when my kids were in, you know, we're preschool and everything, drop the kids off, and little Johnny or little Susie, it's like, whoa.
Exactly.
They're not going to have a good day.
It's going to be a rough one. Yeah, it's going to be a rough start.
Cool. You know, but it's all well and good.
Oh, yeah. It'll work out for sure in the end. All right, so you started playing early. Did you play any other sports growing up as well?
I ran track. I mean, basketball really wasn't a sport for me. I tried it, but it wasn't physical enough. You know, in sports, I mean, my philosophy was if someone made fun of you or someone picked on you or someone did anything to you, you know, you legally, you know, had a chance to just hit him as hard as you possibly could and not get in trouble
not
for
in
it.
Trouble, yeah.
With basketball, you couldn't do that, you know? And I was always fast. I could always run like the wind. So, I mean, when I was playing football, you know, as I grew up, the coaches also said, you know, Robert, to get in shape for football, why don't you run track also? And I was like, sure.
Yeah.
So I ended up running indoor track and outdoor track. So I became a track superstar also. But, you know, football was more my sport because it allows you to release frustration in a legal way, I could say right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Gives us an outlet to release our angers and frustration that you said.
That is without getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Although we do have knuckleheads nowadays that do things above and beyond the scope of what you're supposed to do as far as releasing your anger.
That's true.
They get themselves in trouble, but it's a different generation from the generation I grew up with, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, so you mentioned growing up in the Syracuse area, and you ended up going to Syracuse University. So talk about that process and how you ended up deciding to go there.
You know, I had a love and an affinity for Penn State because Penn State and Syracuse were a huge rivalry, you know, back when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And then Penn State just had this mystique because they always won. You know, I love the city of Syracuse and my university, you know, but Penn State always had this mystique with Joe Paterno, you know, the white helmets, the blue jerseys, the whole Penn State aura, you know, and just, you know, even Syracuse kids, you know, you get caught up in it.
Yeah.
And my basic schools really came down to, you know, Penn State and Syracuse University, but the one reason that Syracuse University won out over Penn State was a simple fact that my mother graduated from a Syracuse University, and I always thought it would be cool, you know, to have a degree from the same place, you know, as one of my parents, you know. That led me to the point of, you know, just staying home at Syracuse, just being in a comfortable environment, and just going to where I could basically drive 5 minutes from where I grew up, you know, in a small town of Janesville, right outside of Syracuse, and I, you know, I could walk the campus from, you know, where I grew up, where I lived.
Oh, wow.
You know? So
nice.
It was a huge advantage for me just being able to be home because, you know, I never really experienced being homesick because literally for my practice for 4 years, I always tell everybody I had a cheering section of about anywhere between 20 to 30 people every single day
every
for practice.
Oh, wow.
It was my entire family, my grandma, my aunts, my uncles, my great. I was like, holy smokes, you know, but I look back on it now, you know, and what a blessing for a kid attending, you know, a major university to have not just, you know, the support of fans in the city, but just to have the support of his family there at every practice. When I say every practice, I mean every single practice.
They would come to every practice. You know, oh, wow.
Every practice. My grandmother, she could look out of her window and see the practice field from her house.
Yeah.
And so she would always walk over. Her and my grandfather would always walk over. So, you know, my aunts and it's a great feeling of pride in yourself, knowing that you're doing something not just for yourself, and not just for a community, but for people who love you and people who believe in you and people who understand that, you know, you're doing something that you love to do since you were a kid. So it was a blessing for me going to Syracuse, you know, because I wouldn't have gotten that at Penn State or Boston College or Tennessee or any of the other schools that offered me, you know, and I look back on that now and what a great blessing it was and lesson it was for me.
Yeah, definitely have a huge advantage to have your family there and have the support. And it would have been a much longer commute for them to make it down to Penn State to watch every practice.
Oh, five and a half hour commute.
yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's awesome that they're there and that they love football as well, I'm guessing, and love to support support you as well. So that's awesome. And I'm just wondering, did the kind of the lineage of running backs at the school have anything to do with it as well, with the great backs that have come out of Syracuse? Was that a part of your decision as well?
I mean, it didn't so much as have any part of my decision in going to Syracuse. You know, I respected, you know, Jim Brown, you know, Ernie Davis, Larry Zonka, you know, Jim Nance, you know, Floyd Little, You know, I can go on and on and on about the great backs, but, you know, before myself, but I knew about the history of Syracuse because I grew up here. I was born here. I knew about the legend of 44.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just wanted to go someplace where I fit in, you know, and I was happy. I wasn't trying to be Jim Brown. I wasn't trying to be Ernie Davis. You know what? I wasn't trying to be Floyd Little. You know who Jim Brown and Floyd Little are good friends of mine, you know, to this day, as being former SU backs.
Yeah.
You know, I was just trying to go into a place as a quiet kid, you know, make my own mark, you know, and just be happy. You know, and that's what I tell the kids that I train or that I mentor or that I talk to, you know, across the place and across this country now. You know, I just, you know, don't go to a school because someone wants you to go to a school. Go to a school that's going to make you happy. And all I wanted to do was go to a college and university and be happy. And I was.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, definitely being comfortable where you are and being comfortable in your environment is definitely important. And yeah, you shouldn't just go just because.
It's a huge advantage.
Just because, yeah, somebody tells you to go there and you have to, you know, have the comfort level there once with the coaches and the staff and everyone there that you're comfortable to be the player that you can be and that they'll help you to get to the levels you want to get to.
Correct.
Yeah. So obviously, yeah, that did happen at Syracuse, and you're able to become a third round pick in that '89 draft. So,
yeah.
So talk about that experience and being drafted, and where you expected to go compared to where you end up going, and where you're expecting to go higher or lower. Talk about that experience for you.
No, it was a different, you know, dynamic. You know, at Syracuse, I actually shared running back duties with a tailback, the parade All-American, Mr. Everything out of high school, Michael Owens, you know.
Okay.
But my whole philosophy, you know, throughout high school, throughout college, and throughout the pros was, you know, I didn't need to be the man.
Yeah.
I wanted to be on a team, you know, that was talented enough, you know, and good enough where I could be like a cog in the machine that allowed us to win championships. I was always about championships.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it didn't matter if I rushed for 1,000 yards or 2,000 yards or had 300 yards rushing each game. You know, each game, I didn't care about that. All I cared about was, you know, was putting myself in a position to be able to be successful on a football field. You know, and in my years at Syracuse, you know, and that's what I did. You know, my sophomore year, they moved me to wide receiver because I thought I was athletic enough. They thought I was athletic enough to play wide receiver. I was, but my heart wasn't into it.
Yeah.
You know, the physicality of the game doesn't happen as a wide receiver. You don't get to hit people.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but not the same as a running back does.
Yeah.
You know, so we struggled the first half of the year. Then they moved me back to running back, and then we won those four games. And next year we go 11-0. Then the year after that we go 10-1.
Oh wow!
So I mean, moving me back to running back was a great decision, but I never really cared. I remember going into my senior year and looking at all these publications that I never really paid attention to anyway. But some of the seniors are talking about it. They're like, Robert, wow, you're 42nd running back, rated running back in the country. How is that possible? I was like, I don't know, and I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, I'm just going to go out there and be the best possible player I possibly can, you know, year in and year out. And by the end of the year, you know, from the scouts and everything, I was the number 3 rated running back on the board for most of our draft
teams.
Experts.
Oh, wow.
I think the only thing that really dropped me a lot, but I had like 4 juniors come out my senior year that were like megastars. Barry Sanders, Sammy Smith, Bobby Humphreys, and I forget the other one. But these guys are juniors leaving the draft early that were like really gonna jump ahead of me in the draft, you know. But I didn't care about getting drafted, you know, in what round or things of that nature. All I cared was being given the opportunity to be able to go out there and prove to myself, you know. And that's what I try to tell everybody today, you know. If given the opportunity, you know, do the best job you possibly can. You know, if you're not successful, you can always correct the mistakes you make and get better. You know, you can. I mean, it doesn't mean football is over. So, and that's what I did. You know, just went out there and made the best of every opportunity ever given.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a different mindset back then. And for not many guys like you who are, you know, team focused and wanting to be on.
Oh, no, they're not.
Exactly. As we see in the news nowadays, exactly, certain players.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
but yeah, having a team first mentality and wanting the team to win is definitely kind of maybe a lost art and something that's
That team first mentality has been lost with these kids nowadays. It's like, holy smoke.
Yeah.
I get that name and names from the Odell back. Antonio Brown, Ezekiel Elliott. It's like, okay, guys, you know, get over yourself.
Yeah.
It's a team sport.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so yeah, you're focused on the team and in that aspect of things. And was there a moment where you kind of thought that you could make the NFL? Is that something that you're looking to do, or is it is something that just kind of happened?
I mean, it's something that just kind of happened. You know, I didn't have the mindset of ever thinking that I was good enough to make the NFL. So I never really worried about it.
Yeah.
All I did was go out there every single day and work as hard as I possibly could. I've always been taught growing up that, you know what, I mean, Robert, you make your own opportunities. So if you, my mother always tell me, Robert, if you go out there and you do the best job you possibly can, you know, just learning the game, just understanding the game, just loving the game, you'll be fine. You can't let anybody dictate to you how good you think you can, you know, or cannot be. You have to do that. You know what? See what I say, baby? They're not gonna give a damn about you. You know, if you don't perform well, you know. But if you perform well, they're gonna cheer you. So what kind of type of person is that? You know, they're there for you when you're doing good, but they're not there for you when you're doing bad. So just go out there and fight amongst yourself. Always challenge yourself and don't worry about others. And I've used that philosophy throughout my entire playing career. I use it throughout life. It's like, you know what? I can't please anybody else. All I can do is go out there, you know, and work as hard as I can. If that's good enough, great. If it's not, oh, well, you know, I tried my best. I can get better. I mean, I can work a little bit harder, but I did my best.
Yeah.
So all I ever did in football was go out there and did my best. And fortunately, that was enough that my best actually caught the eyes of a lot of scouts where it really impressed them. So I was like, that's cool. But I wasn't trying to impress anybody. I was just trying to go out there and work as hard as I can. And, you know, and that because that's the type of person I am.
Yeah, let the cards fall where they may. It's a good lesson
for
kids. Yeah, just to don't focus on the outside and what others are saying and doing, but focus on yourself and what you can do. Focus on working hard. That's the main thing. You work hard, and if you're good enough, and working hard is good enough to get the attention, then you'll get that attention, which is due to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about your time in the NFL. You made it to the Eagles and spent some time with them. So talk about your time in the NFL and kind of achieving the dream of playing at the highest level.
You know, what a great experience, you know, to get drafted in the third round, you know, and fly down to Philadelphia the next day and get a chance to, you know, to meet players and coaches, you know, that you idolized as a kid growing up. I remember my first game.
Yeah.
You know, we played the Los Angeles, they were the Oakland Raiders at the time, but we played the Oakland Raiders, you know, at Bet Stadium. And Marcus Allen had been it was my biggest idol by far. I mean, I had his poster, like two of his posters in my room.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had his football cards. I had press clippings he had from across the country and everything, you know, from games he had. You know, he was papered all over my room and on my school books and on everything.
Yeah.
You know, he's who I feel I molded my game after. And I remember after the game, we actually beat the Raiders, but after the game, he's walking in the field, and I was like a kid in a candy store, and I'm just sitting there staring at him. And Randall Cunningham walks up to me, and he's like, John, you want to meet him? I was like, you introduce me to him?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. So I walk over to him, and I was like, how you doing, Mr. Allen? And you know, he's like, I know who you are. And I was like, and I was shocked.
Oh, wow.
with guys, but they know the draft picks, you know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly, yeah.
But he's like, you know, and I told him, it's like, you know what, I mean, I've idolized you since your days at USC. You know, you've always been my favorite runner, you know? We're both the same height, you know, we're the same size. You know, I'm probably a little faster, but you know, I didn't say that. But,
<I know. laughs>
but it was a great opportunity, you know, and I actually sat there and got his autograph, you know, for me to, you know, what, you know, player goes and gets another player's autograph, you know, but it was like, it was a great experience. It was so much fun, you know, to be able to do something that you love to do and actually do it for a job now. It was just, it was a blast. I mean, I learned so much. I had such a group of great, you know, football players on my team, you know, Heath Sherman, Izell Jenkins, you know, Reggie White, Jerome Brown, Clyde Simmons, Seth Joyner, you know, Andre Waters, Eric Allen. I mean, I can go on and on and on about the list of guys, you know, and
yes, great players,
and for someone to come from a small, you know, knit community like Syracuse, to go to a large city like Philadelphia and be accepted and be adopted by those guys, you know, as not just a teammate, but a brother, you know, a family member, a friend, you know, it was just something that, you know, it just felt good and felt right, you know, and I learned so much from it. And I really appreciate my years in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's amazing. And yeah, if it was now that you met him, that you probably could have done the jersey exchange. You'd probably have one of his jerseys.
Yeah.
But yeah, it must have been a great experience and a great time with them and being with those great players and those great teams that they had up there in Philadelphia.
It was a blast.
Yeah, it must have been a blast for sure. Yeah, definitely. All right, but obviously you end up coming up north to the yeah. The Canadian Football League and playing up here with the Argo or Baltimore's first exactly.
I went to the state team first.
Yeah, exactly. So talk about that transition from the NFL to the CFL and how that all went down.
You know what? It was a situation where the one thing about football the people don't see, like the fans don't see, is the dark side of football. You know, that's the whole, you know, the free agency, the player signing, you know, a certain amount of contracts, the coaches, you know, they'll bring a player in, he may be more talented, but they didn't pick that player, so they can't make themselves look bad, so they'll let that player go and keep the player that's less talented. So, sometimes you just get caught up in a numbers game, you know, and I got caught up in a numbers game in the NFL, and I was just sitting there, you know, always training and working out one day, and my agent asked me, like, Robert, you want to, you know, there's a CFL team, you know, and in Baltimore, you know, would you like to go and try out for them? You know, and I really didn't know not a lot about the Canadian Football League. I mean, I knew some about it,
yeah.
You know, but I didn't know the full gist of it. And I remember just going down to Baltimore, flying down that day, and I remember running a 40 time for who at the time he's the general manager of the Toronto Argonauts, Jim Pop. He's the general manager of the Baltimore CFL. Yeah.
Oh,
Pop,
okay.
Pop is the general manager. He tied me in my 40. So he tied me in 140. He looks at his watch, shakes his head, goes the other end, ties me in another 40, looks at his watch. He's like, you know what? You want to run this one more time for me? But at that point, I'm thinking, dude, I probably ran like a 4.6, a 4.7.
Yeah.
You know, I said, they're not going to sign me now. So I'm like, you know, whatever. I was like, no. So I run another one. And as I'm walking up, I'm expecting to go home. Because I had been working out. But I hadn't been working out like I'd normally been working out, you know, like
your regular
board, you know.
Yeah.
And I asked him, it's like, Mr. Pop, what did I run? He's like, well, your first one was 4.33. He said, I thought that was kind of fast, so I had you run it again. So your second one was 4.36. He said, your last one, you got tired, you ran a 4.41. He said, how fast are you? I was like, I'm that fast. They signed me. They signed me that day.
Yeah.
And I literally played that game.
No way.
I played that game. You know, I had like two practices in, and normally it said, you know, they let players, you know, wait a week or wait 2 weeks before they learn the system and everything. But I was always very had an eye intellect and a high football IQ.
Yeah.
So I picked up on the offense immediately when I got it. You know.
Yeah.
At Syracuse, I had to play two positions, so you had to learn two spots. So you try and learn everything,
yeah,
exactly. And that makes you a much more, you know, all-purpose player,
yeah.
You know. But I'd heard about, but never heard about the mystique of at the time of Mike Pringle, who was in the backfield.
Yeah.
So when I got to Baltimore, I had to actually humble myself and be a blocking back for Mike Pringle. But in my thinking, my rationale was, you know what, I can learn what it takes to be a fullback, and I can learn this game from the fullback position. Plus, they loved having me as a fullback, lining me up as a wide receiver, where I was a mismatch against any linebacker they put, you know, man-to-man. Tracy Ham would be as like, you know, drum, go deep. And they would just throw the ball up. It'd be a touchdown every time, so it created a mismatch problem. So I learned so much about the game of football my first 2 years at Baltimore. But I knew deep in my heart that as great as Mike Pringle was, I mean, I was capable of being every bit as talented as a running back myself.
You could be,
you know, and I knew my opportunity would come. So, you know, so I was going to do everything I could, you know, just to be a team player and get him the yards he needed, you know, and give him the opportunity to be able to go out there and be a star, you know, and get us to the Grey Cup. But I eventually knew, which is when I went to Toronto and everything took off for me, you know, that would eventually happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just amazing that the guys, the backfield for the Stallions versus you and Mike Pringle. I mean, that's just scary. Yeah.
we always laugh about that. It's like, holy smokes.
You know, exactly. It's like having Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders in the same backfield. I mean,
yeah. Because everyone always says that. Wait a minute, you and Mike Pringle were in the same backfield? I was like,
yeah.
I was a black and fullback, and he was a running back. Like,
yeah.
No.
that's just not fair. All right, so yeah, you guys did end up winning one a championship with them in Baltimore. Yeah. Then yeah, and then
we got robbed of the other one. It was a whole Canadian thing. They didn't want us to win.
Yeah, the Lions won the other one, but yeah, we won't get into the details.
Oh,
on that.
Gosh, yeah. We could have five, man.
Oh, Louis, yeah. Yeah, you could have the whole handful of rings, but
I could have five.
All right, but excuse me, but yeah, after Baltimore, you went to the Argus, you said, and you got your chance to be the guy and to get all the carries and stuff. So yeah, talk about your time there and also with the Lions as well after that.
I mean, it was a great experience. I mean, I'd never lived out of the country before, so going to Canada for the first time, you know, it was just I mean, I'd always lived in. I went from Cherokee to Philadelphia, to, you know, to Baltimore to. Toronto. It was a great experience playing with those guys. You know, I get a chance to, you know, play with Doug Flutie, meet Mike Pinball Clemens, who I'd heard a lot about playing in the CFL, but never knew how charismatic he was until I got a chance to meet him.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew, I kind of knew, but I really didn't know the emphasis that was going to be put on me coming into the season. I thought I was just going to be able to come in and just be like, okay, I mean, I know I'm a very talented player. I know Coach Matthews signed me for a reason. But you know what? They have Doug Flutie here and they have Mike Pinball Clemens here.
Yeah.
And even when we had our reunion here 2 years ago, they said one of the greatest teams ever playing the CFL, the 96 and 97 winner, but the 97 team was out of this world.
Yeah.
But they're just like, you know, they always say you were a 6 foot, you know, almost a 6 foot four, 225 pound back, you know, they could run a 4.340. It's like, that's a matchup problem for anybody. Plus, it's like you have the mentality, or you have the demeanor of a fullback.
Yeah.
So you can run between the tackles. You know, you can run with finesse, and we can line you out as a wide receiver, and you can run routes. Like that's rare.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know what? Whatever it takes to win.
Yeah.
And I would always say that. It's like, you know what I mean? I told Pinball. I would always tell Pinball during games. You know what? I don't need to be there's two games, two instances. I was just talking to Eric Blunt. You know, used to play with Edmonton. You know about it, where he was saying he had scored 5 touchdowns in a game before, which is a Edmonton Eskimo record. And I told him, I was like, Eric, there's two games, you know, in Toronto where I scored 4 touchdowns by halftime in both games.
Oh wow!
You know, I'm tied with Terry Greer for the record, but I'm like, you know, and I remember Coach Matthews coming up to me at halftime and at the time it was a Sky Dome.
Yeah.
You know, and asking, but Robert, you have a chance of breaking a record if you want to go out there. You know, you have 4 touchdowns. I was like, you know what, Coach? No. It's like, I mean, why break a record? You know, I mean, there's bigger things than breaking a record. You know, we have a great captain to play about. Let the other guys play. You know, and he was always like, you know, that's the player, you know, that I signed to the team. You know, selfless.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't care about stats and yards and things of that nature. All I cared about was, as you said before, I have 4 championships rings. You know, I went to 4 Grey Cups my first 4 years in the league.
Oh wow! Yeah,
who does that?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm more proud of that than I am of a certain amount of touchdowns, you know, or a certain amount of catches or yards or things of that nature. I never cared about that. All I cared about was winning. As long as we had that W up there, that's all that mattered. Because that's that W led to what? Grey Cup champions. People eventually forget about players, you know, because they get old, but they never forget about Grey Cup champions. Because my name is plastered all over that, you know, that great cup, you know,
exactly.
And that's what I'm proud, you know. Long when I'm dead and gone, dead and buried and gone, you know, people still see the name Robert Drummond and that, because it was a team thing; it was not an individual thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why we play. You don't play for the yards or for the stats, but we play for the championships and for the rings. And yeah, guys like you help teams to win.
Tell that to this newer generation.
Exactly.
they're not listening.
They're not listening at all.
Holy
no,
smokes.
No. It's totally different now. Yeah, it's all about
oh my god.
Yeah, the social media and having your social media platform and all of that. But yeah, you play to win the game, as the coach says. And what's his name? Herm Edwards says, you play to win the game.
Yeah.
It's all about winning, so, and you definitely done a lot of that and a lot of championships and because of your attitude, your selflessness, and your team first mentality is what helps to help the team win. So
that's what wins
championships. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, great on you for that, and for congratulations on those championships, and he did get a couple of All-Stars as well in 96 and 97, first team All-Stars. So yeah, you put the team first, and you can still have the individual accolades as well. So it's yeah, it's a it's just it's awesome. All right, so let's oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, it's just an amazing testament, you know, what can you accomplish, you know, when you put your mind to something.
Exactly. All right, so let's talk about life after football and what you're doing now. You're a personal trainer right now, and you have your company, the Face of Fitness. So talk about transitioning out of football and starting up your personal training business.
Yes, you know, I mean, when I was getting near the end of football, you know, and I was slowing down, you know, and I was realizing, you know, I didn't have the love for the game in my heart as I did as a young kid, you know, and that's what I told myself. I was like, you know, Robert, you're not happy as you were, you know, walking onto that field, you know, because it used to be the brightest part of your day, you know, because you got to do something that you love. Yeah. I didn't love it anymore. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just meant that, you know, what we were just talking about, I sat here, you know, and I would see guys look at their stats at halftime, you know, and talk about how many catches they had, and worry about how they look, and worry about who's in the stand watching them, and worry about everything except winning. And I was like, you know what? This is not why I play this game, you know. And I knew it was time for me to retire, but I told myself, you know, when I retire, it's like, Robert, you know, what do you want to do when you retire? You know, just questioning myself.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I was like, you know what? The one thing I want to do is I want to always help kids get better and understand that with hard work, you know, with the will, you know, to want to be better, you know, you can always get better. You can always become successful. You may fall, you know, get your knees scraped every now and then, but hey, get back up, dust yourself off, and keep trying.
Yeah.
Those who stop trying are ones that are never successful. You know, and I told him I always wanted to help, you know, help people just be healthy and live longer, you know, so they can have more time with their families. You know, because I'm big in the family time, and the family is always first. I remember my coach in college, Coach Mack, when we walked in as freshmen.
Yeah.
He wrote four words on the board, you know, or four phrases on the board. Some were words, you know, that stuck with me my entire life. He wrote God first. He wrote the family second. You know, he wrote work and school next. He said, and everything else. And we're like, Coach, what does that mean? He's like, you know what? As long as you follow these priorities in life, you'll be fine. Always put God first. Always put your family second. Always put work and school third, and everything else falls in order after that. And that's, you know, whenever I make a decision, whatever I decide to do, whatever I try to do as a man or a father or a mentor, I try to always put those principles first. You know, that's one of the reasons I never really got into coaching, because I coached my son's Pop Warner team the year after I retired from Toronto, you know, in 2002.
And
I got a chance to spend time, you know, with my son. So it was a plus for me. And I got a chance to teach them the game the way I learned it. So it was a plus for the kids, a plus for everybody here. And I absolutely loved it because I just had time to spend with him. And I remember when he graduated and went on to freshman football, things of that nature, I remember saying to myself, oh my gosh, I mean, I can still keep coaching. These parents want me to still keep coaching. But it would take that, I mean, some of the games we would have would be the same days, the games my son games would be played. And I'm sorry, it's like no disrespect to any other kid. My son's more important to me than sons are more important to me than anything in the world. You know, so I'm not going to get into coaching if it's going to take time away from me being the father to them. I refuse to do that. You know, they come first, and everybody respected that. You know, it's getting to the point now where they're getting older and where they really don't, you know, they don't need me as much. They're done with sports and things of that nature. I can get back into coaching. But it's like that was one of the reasons that kept me away from coaching was like, I mean, I even coached, even being here in Syracuse, I would coach some of the Syracuse University coaches' sons. And I would always sit there and remember some of these kids were talented, but their fathers were never there because they were doing stuff with Syracuse. And I was like, you know what? There's more important things in life than just coaching. You know, it's like being a father. You know, and I'm not knocking them and disrespecting them. I understand people got to work, you know, and got to eat and put food on the table, you know. But it's just like that's something that children remember all the time. Just turning around and looking up and seeing a family member, seeing your dad, seeing your mom, you know, just smiling. You may not even get in the game, but just for you just to know that they're there to support you is a huge thing for these kids, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely big, and that's something you grew up with your family being there for you and practices and stuff like that. So that's kind of stuck with you, and it's definitely good. Yeah, for everyone to, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons I didn't get into coaching. It was the same thing. You know, you want to spend time with your family, and you want to put them first before that. But yeah, it's great that you're able to help kids now and to help them in sports and get them ready for sports. So you just do that in the Syracuse area? Is that how your training works? You just work with kids there?
Yes, I do in the Syracuse area. I also created I have a website for this, but I created a system that can measure the overall athleticism in an athlete, you know, between the ages of 8 to 12. And then from 13 to 18, and it's called REPS, which stands for Redefining Athletic Performance System. So okay. What you do is put each athlete to a series of five tests, five sport-specific tests, and I called about, or I emailed or texted, or emailed, about 1,000 coaches and asked them, you know, coach and coaches, you know, in this sport, what did you look for in an athlete? You know, what test do you use to measure the barometer of athleticism? Yeah. And all these coaches always send me back emails. You know, and I whittled down to five specific tests that they each use. You know, even for soccer, I use what the U.S. Olympic Soccer League uses for U.S. Olympic Soccer Organization uses to test their athletes. You know, and over the years, just from testing athletes from, oh my goodness, from London, you know, to Hong Kong, to, you know, to Brazil, to Puerto Rico, to Dominican Republic, you know, to Hawaii, you know, just testing athletes all over from the contacts and everything I had. And I know, I work at Delta probably like 6 hours a week, and then working at Delta 6 hours a week, I'm able to fly anywhere in the world Delta flies for free.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that's a huge perk of having that. So, you know, I was able to just fly and as a trainer, everything, just test these athletes and just from that raw data, you know, and all a person has to do is run the test, you know, and put the numbers, you know, and then when the numbers come back, there'll be two scores. Yeah. There'll be what's called your overall reps rating, which tells you where you rank among let's just say close to over 500,000 athletes, you know, who for that sport.
Yeah.
And for that position. And there'll be what's called your hurricane score, which tells you, and your hurricane score is given after every, for every test, a hurricane category 5 being strong, category 1 being weak. So if you get a 5, you know, and for that event, for your sport, you're pretty strong. If you get a 1, you know, for that event, for your sport, you're pretty weak. You got a lot of training to do.
Okay, I see. And how long does this test take for kids to go through that?
I can do a group of people in a half an hour. You know, it's not a super long test or anything.
Also, again, it's not just...
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just gonna say it's not just one on one. It's a group. Everybody can do it. Like a bunch of kids can do it at the same time.
You can do it as a group. I'm actually in the process of creating one for collegiate athletes. You know, because a lot of the colleges got wind of this, and they're like, it's a pretty cool idea. You know, it's like the simple fact that okay, even with the combine numbers, you know, I can take you mathematically. And if you give me all the numbers from the combine, I can tell you mathematically who's the best athlete or who's going to be the best athlete in the combine just from their test.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah, I can't tell you how it's going to translate into their success on a collegiate football field, but I can tell you from the numbers who's going to be a great athlete and who's not.
A great athlete and not. Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting. I actually have a patent on a mathematical algorithm that creates the program.
Oh wow! Okay, so this is all your development, and it's just something that you put together, and you're looking to get it patented.
All my development, everything that I put together, I've been doing it for almost over 10 years.
Oh wow!
Just collected. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's my son called me the Nutty Professor when it comes to being on the computer all the time.
Yeah, you run it by him. Nice. And you said it's applicable to all sports. You're saying?
It's all sport. I mean, I even have a. The IOC, the International Olympic Committee, asked me, you know, could this be something that I could do for international Olympic events? And I was like, you know, you give me a little bit of time, you know, give me a chance to travel the world, you know, and test some athletes and see, you know, the barometers and parameters of, you know, the athleticism. And yeah, I could do it, no problem. So it's something that's growing. It's something that needed. It's something that's like a developmental tool for athletes, you know. So I'm tired of, these young athletes, you know, who excel, you know, at the ages of 10, 11, and 12 and think that they're better than everybody else. And, you know, and then by 13, 14, 15, because they haven't worked hard and stayed ahead of the game, younger kids who are not as athletic and not as gifted blow right past them.
Yeah.
These kids, this generation doesn't understand work ethic.
Yeah, definitely.
You become, I mean, like the greatest running back in the CFL, Mike Pringle, I play with. And I look, take a look back now. Why is Mike Pringle so great? I pride myself on my work ethic and how hard I work. And I think Mike Pringle works harder than me in practice.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I was always, that always impressed me.
Yeah.
You know, Mike was the hardest worker you would ever see. Doug Flutie, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play in the CFL. One of the hardest workers I would ever see. I mean, it was just natural for me to do it, but I didn't expect guys to be like that, that greater level, you know, at that high level to work as hard as they did, you know? So that's what kids should understand. That's what kids should know. In order to be like those guys, you got to work just as hard as them. Michael Jordan, always the first one to the gym, the last one to leave. Kobe Bryant, always the first one to the gym, the last one to leave. Yeah. LeBron James, always the first one to the gym, the last, I mean, holy smokes.
It's not coincidence.
No, it's not. It's not coincidence at all.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why these guys achieve the level that they achieve. And I wanted to create a program to show, because if I had a dollar for every parent that came up to me and told me how great their son or daughter was before I tested them, and then that tested me, wait a minute, that can't be right. Like, numbers don't lie, bro.
Yeah, exactly. What are you in shock?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
I've humbled a lot of parents like that, but I'm like, you know what? I just did the test. These numbers don't lie. They can get better. They can get a lot better. But the expectations that you're putting on your child when they're not as good as you think they are going to ruin them.
Yeah,
because they're not as good as you think.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so
giving false praise.
Who's hurt sometimes?
Yeah. All right. So you're. You mentioned that you said the IOC might want to do this as an Olympic event. Is that what you said?
Not an Olympic event, but you know, but a means for testing Olympic athletes.
Oh, I see.
You know, it's a training tool.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
I mean, in college athletics, I mean, the biggest thing for an athlete to really want to get better and improve himself is competition. If you have competition in your workouts, you're always going to try and outdo your peers. You know, the one thing in Syracuse that made it so good back when I was in school, because, I mean, and I got the idea from my strength coach, Mike Wosick, who has, how many Super Bowl rings does Tom Brady have?
I think he's six. Six now, yeah.
Yeah, okay, Mike Wosick has seven, because he's strength coach for the Cowboys during their heydays.
Okay.
And I remember he would have a series of seven or eight different events that we did at Syracuse to try and find out who was the best athlete. And I ended up being like, you know, with Tim Green, Rob Moore, all those guys. I mean, I was always the third best athlete, and I always thought that was cool. And I always said to myself, man, I wish they had a system like this, that I would have loved to have compared myself to someone like a Jim Brown or Arnie Davis or Floyd Little. They probably may have been better athletes, but at least I would have known where I stood with those guys, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I'm thinking, saying to myself, you know, what a great idea for teams, you know, from here on out, on into the future, be able to compare themselves against the likes of other athletes. You know, I think it's just a great idea, a great training tool, you know, and then that's in the process of going on right now. And my one for college is called, I call it, you know, the MCATs for medical doctors that they have to take care in the States. It's called NCATS with the N, which stands for National Athletic Collegiate Athletic Testing System.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just the whole process. I mean, as I said before, I'm always in front of a computer. I'm always thinking of ideas and trying to help the next generation, and always trying to help people be successful. You know, not just physically, but mentally also, because in order for people to get better, in order for people to become great, you know what you have to do to them first? You have to humble them.
Yeah, yeah.
See, Syracuse football now is ready to become great because they got humbled.
yeah, they're rough one this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. They know what that feels like, you know. So they're ready to go back to school and go back to work. They realize now they're not as good as they thought they were.
Yeah, yeah. They have a whole nother level to get to. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. So, so the patent's not out yet. So when will this kind of be? Are you kind of putting this out to certain organizations now?
My high school one is from 8-year-olds to 18-year-olds. It's out already.
Okay.
The website is rapsrating.com.
Okay, rostbrayden.com. All right, we'll have that in the show notes for people so they can get information on that once you finish things up. Okay, awesome. That's cool. It's a great tool, and hopefully that grows and they can get that out to as many people so they can use it for sure.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So let's finish off by what I call the top of the mountain moment. So kind of looking back on your football journey and all that you've gone through football, the highs and lows, the good and the bad, all the struggles you've gone through and all the triumphs. Is there a favorite story, a favorite moment, words of wisdom for younger players? How would you like to finish things off?
I mean, I can't really sit here and say that this is a favorite moment. You know, as you said before, I mean, I've won four Grey Cups, you know, so.
There's a lot of private moments.
No, there's a lot. They can't say that. But you know, what a great feeling. You know, yeah. What a great feeling of accomplishment that you accomplished something not just by yourself individually, but you know, but as a group, as a team, as a, you know, a collective effort. You know, and that's a great feeling. You know, the birth of my children. You know, was probably the most joyous day of my life. You know, and it filled my heart with, as a parent yourself. You know, it's just, you know, wow, I'm a father now. Now, you know, I'm not the most important thing in my life. You know, here's these other two lives now that depend on me to be dad, you know? So as far as the football aspect of it now, you know, I love being able to be important enough and famous enough, if I can use that word, to be able to have a voice, you know? So what these kids would be like, wow, it's Robert Drummond. And I'll be like, no, yeah, man, that's so well and good. But then they'll hear me speak and they'll hear me talk to them. And I talk to them like a human being, and I talk to them about being better, you know. You'll go to school, do your work, listen to your parents, don't do anything bad, you know. Everything that really a parent tells them, you know, and they need mentors, you know, other than guys who are, you know, or famous athletes, yes. Yeah. Being an athlete that's accomplished so much, you know, over the years, you know, is a prominent thing, and that's all well and good and everything. But these kids need to hear the stories about how we did it. You know, and understand that it takes hard work, and they can accomplish anything they set their mind to. And don't let anybody ever take that goal or dream away. You know, and that's what I wake up every single day for, and that's why I still personal train and do seminars. You know, and go and talk to school to the local schools here all the time. You know, and it's giving back. We as a society have to understand that we wouldn't be where we are today without the help of others.
Exactly.
So that's what I try to do every day. I try and help somebody else. I tell them always, all the time, you know, each one, teach one, teach the next generation. If I train you like this and I show you what to do, you tell the next generation so they can become better. I want you guys to be better than us, and they respect me for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome that you're doing that. And yeah, giving back. And like you said, you know, having, no one gets to where they're at without the help of others. No. And yeah, so having guys like you understand that and want to help others and to give back to your community and to give back to kids and help them to achieve their goals is awesome. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Robert, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an awesome interview, some great stories and great information and some great things that people can learn from. And again, I'll have the links to your company and what you're doing in the show notes. And also on social media, if they want to follow you, I'll have the links to your social media as well. And people can follow you and see what you're doing there as well. So Robert, thank you so much and I appreciate your time.
All right. Definitely. Anytime, man.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to After the Gridiron. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure you subscribe to the show and also leave a rating and review. By doing that, you also help to spread the word about the podcast and assist others in finding the show so more people can enjoy this great content. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, with the links to those being found on the website. Your support is very much appreciated. Also, please visit the resources page on the website for links to our sponsors and affiliates. Their support helps to keep the show running. So go to www.atgridiron.com/resources to check them out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you when we kick off our next episode.